This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
We can't have all these huge parking lots everywhere. We can't have these, 4,000 square foot, 3,000 square foot homes, but spread out throughout hundreds and hundreds of acres. We've got to come closer together physically, but also as a community.
It's the 10th largest city in the United States and the third largest city in California. But San Jose is often overshadowed by its popular neighbor to the north, San Francisco. Today on Sea Change Radio, we talk about San Jose and the little-known ways that this big city is leading the charge towards sustainability. Our guest is Councilmember Ash Khalra, who talks about the successes and challenges of promoting environmentally sound policy in a city that's one of the most ethnically and economically diverse in the nation. Councilmember Khalra tells us about the progress being made there, from hybrid buses to a citywide plastic bag ban to the mission to make San Jose a zero-waste city. He also shares with us some of the challenges the city's policymakers have encountered, including the economic downturn and a pervasive, not-in-my-backyard attitude that stands in the way of progress. Listen now as we examine how the lessons learned in this urban microcosm in the United States can be applied to any city working for a greener tomorrow. So my guest on Sea Change Radio, friend of the show, Ash Khalra. He's a council member from San Jose's 2nd District. He was elected in 2008. He's the first Indian American elected to the council in San Jose, which is the 10th largest city in America. Before serving as a council member in San Jose, Ash was a public defender for 11 years. Ash, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Great to be here.
San Jose is part of the Bay Area. There are many different organizations that have a role in urban planning and sustainability issues. Just tell our listeners some of the ones that you're a part of.
Well, in addition to being on the council, and we certainly play a role in that, being a big city in terms of future development, I also serve on the Bay Area Air Quality Management District Board, which focuses on, obviously, air quality throughout the region. I serve on the Association of Bay Area Governments, which is a regional planning board, which sets basically the housing and job growth standards for different cities around the Bay Area. So it also plays a huge role in terms of focusing on transit-oriented development and basically getting ready for the millions of people that are going to be moving into the Bay Area over the next several decades. Also, I'm on the Caltrain board, which is a very effective train system that connects Santa Clara County. So it essentially connects San Jose with San Francisco and all the points in between. I also serve on our county transit authority, the VTA, which is the bus and light rail system for the county of Santa Clara, which is the county in which San Jose is in.
San Francisco is getting some national press for its progressive policies with their mass transit system and using biodiesel and waste vegetable oil wherever possible and recycling waste vegetable oil. Can you talk about some of the policies that you're most proud of from a mass transit standpoint in San Jose?
Well, San Jose has some initiatives that I think get overshadowed sometimes by what San Francisco is doing just because we don't necessarily get the media attention. But there are a number of different things that San Jose has done. We're right now in the process of having dozens of electric charging stations being put throughout the city. We're also going to have a couple specifically for taxi cabs for electric charging stations, and we're still trying to identify where we're putting them, but probably at the airport and probably somewhere downtown. In addition, we have over 70 hybrid buses that have been implemented and put into place in our transit authority throughout the county. And we also have, as part of our green vision, which is essentially a 15-year plan that was put in place a few years ago, where We're building out our trail system. We're essentially removing our reliance on anything but alternative fuels for our entire city fleet. We're also becoming a zero waste city, and that has to do with not just in terms of the use of fuel, but in terms of our ability to recycle essentially 100% of our waste stream through different processes. And right now, we do a pretty good job of over 80% of what comes into what's thrown away is recycled, essentially.
What are some of the biggest barriers that you have encountered in trying to move these policies forward, and how do you think they get in place in a place like San Jose as opposed to Houston, which I've heard recycles and composts under 15% of its waste stream?
The first step, and really the first barrier, I think, is the public. I mean, you have to get the public aware and get them educated. And I think we're lucky, being in the Silicon Valley, that we have a community that's rather progressive and that wants to do the right thing when it comes to waste, when it comes to recycling. They understand that it's not just about what we're doing right now that impacts us, but we are impacting future generations and how we change our behavior. So it makes it much easier for us to put forward initiatives when the public is almost certainly going to be on board from the get-go. But it doesn't mean that there's going to be a lack of resistance, especially from small businesses that are struggling to meet their payroll, and from residents that have to learn how to deal with their trash. But we've been very successful in our program. We recycle so much of our waste that right now the biggest focus is just on the remaining 15-20% of waste that we do have to put into a landfill. We're right now focusing on composting it and finding ways to get that out of the waste stream as much as possible. And that goes along with us moving towards recycling our water with our water treatment plant, as well as finding other ways to get the community involved in recycling, which includes some of the toxic materials. We have a state-of-the-art facility that helps to get that recycled as well. And so, it's the further along you go, it's harder and harder to get those final percentages, because there are more and more challenges. And some of that includes styrofoam. Some of that includes plastic bags, which we're in the process of eliminating. In fact, in January, San Jose will be the largest city in the nation and with the most strict ban of all plastic bags in all retail. So it's not just grocery stores, it's Macy's, it's Target. We're basically banning it in every aspect of our commercial life, with the exception of restaurants that serve prepared food. So that ban is going to go into effect next year. And I think we are setting a good example nationwide of how we can start to create behavior change that will have a long-lasting impact on our community. All that you dream comes to shine.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is Council Member Ash Kalra. He represents San Jose's 2nd District. In many ways, San Jose mirrors what the rest of the country is and what kind of a city. It's a quote-unquote typical American city. You serve on the Bay Area Air Quality Management District, you mentioned. What kind of things do you see coming from that organization that could be a good bellwether for the rest of other typical American cities?
Yeah, when it comes to air quality and it comes to development, sometimes there are contrary goals that are both noble goals. For example, we would like to develop in San Jose less suburban and more urban, more transit-oriented, higher density. It's better for the environment. It gets people closer to where they work, and it gets people out of their cars. However, we want to do that in the places where there are more jobs and in the places in which people are already moving and driving in and out of. And what that causes is it causes more air pollution in some cases in areas that are already impacted. So what we have to do is we have to balance the need for getting people out of their cars with the fact there's already elevated air pollution in some of these cities like San Jose. We have to move forward in such a manner that recognizes that we need to start thinking differently about how we develop our cities, and especially our suburban cities. And I think San Jose is a great example of how many suburban communities are growing. You know, you had this the influx into the urban areas, then you had the kind of the flight into the suburban areas, and now those suburban areas are becoming cities. And I think San Jose is an example of that. And we have to be cognizant of the fact that as we develop our cities, that what we do in San Jose doesn't stay within the borders of San Jose. It affects air quality throughout the region. And so we have to work with our partners, with Oakland, with San Francisco, and with all of the counties in the area in terms of how we monitor the effect on what we breathe.
One of the things that, for me, driving to a suburban metropolitan area, that's always a dead giveaway of where I am, is I see a lot of big box retailers and chains that you see around the country. You sit in a lot of meetings with angry and happy citizens who are voicing their concerns for the influx of some of these non-mom and pop stores coming in. But on the other hand, there's the argument that a big box retailer cuts down on emissions because you only have to make one or two trips to get everything you need. Tell us about some of the struggle that's going on there in terms of retailer growth, retail growth from the big box retailers, and how that might, what's your stance on it, and how do you see your citizenry reacting as more and more, like, we don't have a Walmart in San Francisco. Are there Walmarts in the San Jose area? I assume so.
Unfortunately, there's a Walmart in my council district. It's been there for many years, and I don't think that the cost benefit of a Walmart is worth it. You know, I don't think it's worth it for the community in terms of the kinds of jobs it creates, the kinds of jobs it kills. And the reality is the Walmart isn't a fixed place as well. So people do travel from distances to come to the Walmart. I think the past model was that, yes, you may have to go to more than one place to do your shopping, but they may be more local. They may be closer to you.
But walking is almost a thing of the past in a city like San Francisco, in a city like San Jose.
It is a thing of the past, but we're trying to make it a thing of the future.
And how are you doing that?
By changing how we develop our future housing, making it mixed use, somewhat like what you see in places like San Francisco and other more urbanized areas where you have neighborhoods that have everything within that neighborhood. And so it's very challenging to do that when you have a spread out suburban city like San Jose. The way we have to do it is we have to kind of blow up our concept of what a neighborhood is and get rid of kind of the strip mall mentality. And we are doing that. We're doing that in many parts of our downtown and our midtown and North San Jose, and even future development in places like South San Jose, which is really way out in the suburbs. Our future development is going to rely upon mixed use, which brings restaurants and retail in walking distance to future developments. But it does change the mentality of people having to get out of their cars. But it's not easy.
And explain to our listeners what mixed use means.
Mixed use is essentially not just looking at development in terms of, okay, you build housing here, you build your corporate industrial here, you build your commercial retail here in three different places. You actually bring them all together. So you bring your homes close to your jobs. You have mixed use with commercial retail incorporated into the housing developments or within the development itself, if not literally attached to the housing, within walking distance, so that you create a community. And that's really what it used to be like in America with Main Street and the homes and all that. And we went away from that with the suburbs. And that was okay for a while. But now we've seen the dramatically negative impact that's had on our environment and I think on our quality of life as well.
Can you talk about how you think green innovation and green jobs may play a role in trying to lift all of us so there's not just the have and have nots that everyone can have in this, have a piece of the American dream?
Well, that's always been the struggle, and I think it's the struggle now more than ever, the income disparity we see throughout our nation. And Silicon Valley is certainly not immune from the recession. If anything, it was hit harder than most places. But I do believe that it bounces back in a way that's much, much more aggressive than other places as well. And we're seeing that now. Job growth is really starting to pick up as there's more investment in some of these clean technology and some of these emerging technologies, nanotechnology, biosciences. And so we are seeing job growth. And we see some of these companies like Apple sitting on billions of dollars because of the products they're putting out and people are buying them up. The problem that we're seeing as well is that although, yes, we do see increased growth in some of these jobs, it's not lifting up all corners of our community. San Jose is the most diverse large city in the nation. About approximately a third of the million people are Latino, approximately a third are Asian American. And unfortunately, the second largest school district in the state, Eastside Union, you have a 40% dropout rate with Latinos. So we're not doing a good enough job of going back into the own backyard of some of these major global companies and lifting up the kids that are going through the education system there. As these companies market themselves globally, they bring in talent globally. I think they're forgetting about the people that are really in the shadows of these corporate campuses. And that's what we have to do a better job of recognizing that if we want to compete on a global scale, we have to produce talent from within our own ranks. And that means from our own community. And it can't simply just be about the corporate wealth, amassing corporate wealth. That wealth has to get back into the communities, into the neighborhoods that are really struggling right now. Even as we see the economy turn around, those neighborhoods are not turning around. And those kids are really finding it more and more hopeless when it comes to opportunity in the future.
You mentioned backyards. We always hear about in council meetings and local community meetings that not in my backyard or NIMBYism is a problem. All right, but it's something that's valid, and people don't necessarily want a power plant in their backyard, but they want electricity whenever they want it. What are some of the most glaring examples of NIMBYism that you've had to tackle in the last couple of years since you've sat on the council?
You know, I think that most people can relate with the fact that, look, if someone wants to put a power plant next to you, you know, you'll stand up and say, no, my family, you know, for my family's sake, I'm going to stand up against that. But I think the NIMBYism that's more frustrating as we try to plan a city for the future is trying to create higher density neighborhoods, trying to create more transit-oriented developments. And what that means is that we're creating neighborhoods and we're creating housing that's very different than we used to before. So you have single-family homes, and now you're building a medium density. You're building a much larger structure that they're not used to. Well, they're going to object to that. And the reality is that I think as leaders, we have to educate our community as to why it's important to do that for the next generation and the generation that follows. People don't like change. They don't want things to come into their neighborhood that interrupts what they believe to be their quality of life. And my response back is I think that we can do it in such a way that enhances the quality of life for residents. But the reality is that there are always going to be people that don't want things to change. And it's funny, I'll give you one example. We have an area called Evergreen, which is the East Foothills part of San Jose. And we had a person come in to do a development, which was single family homes, kind of spread out, kind of the development we don't like to see, but it was the only thing that matched the surrounding neighborhoods in a way that we felt was appropriate. All the neighbors came out to oppose it because it was the last empty spot of land amongst all these neighborhoods. And they said, well, you're going to ruin our view. You know, we have nothing behind us now. We don't want homes there.
Was it like a wilderness area or anything?
No, it was an old farm. So it was an old farm. A family still lived there. And so the family members came out with tears in their eyes saying, you know what? We've been here for over 100 years. We stood here and watched as your homes came built around our land. We didn't say a word. And now we want to develop our land, and you're telling us that we can't do what we want to do with our land. And so that's an interesting contrast because, you know, at some point it was all empty land. And so we have to find a way.
It's like, you ruined our view.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You ruined, not just our view, you completely changed our family's farmland. And so, you know, we have to understand that as we move forward, that things aren't going to always be the way they were. And that goes the same with high-speed rail, as we hear about all these NIMBYs in the peninsula in these rich communities complaining about high-speed rail, when we know high-speed rail, not just in California, but throughout the country, is something we have to do for the future of our nation.
Tell us why having an increased density in a city like San Jose is a more environmentally aware strategy.
Well, for example, the district I represent, we have the largest undeveloped area in the city. It's called Coyote Valley, and there's a lot of agriculture there. And it's really the last bastion of what used to be called the Valley of Heart's Delight. For those that don't know, before it was Silicon Valley, it was the best farmland in the world. And it's pretty much all gone now with housing and with corporate campuses. And the reality is that if we don't build more densely, we're going to have to cover up every empty spot of land that's left, build into the hillsides, and have people commute further, get the energy out further, and just be less and less efficient. And we cannot sustain population growth unless we start to do infill development and bring people closer together. And as uncomfortable as that is for suburbanites, that's the way that it's been, not only throughout the world, but throughout most parts of America that is urbanized. And so we have to go through this education process with our own communities and take the leadership role of saying, you know what, as painful as this is, we can't have all these huge parking lots everywhere. We can't have these, 4,000 square foot, 3,000 square foot homes, spread out throughout hundreds and hundreds of acres. We've got to come closer together physically, but also as a community. All that jealousy and envy coming from my enemies. While I'm sipping on Ream and running back Lexus and Chevys on the roam. 96 big body sitting on chrome. As we head up out the zone, stone facing the zone. You can admire, but don't look too long. I'm living a dream with triple beans and my pockets bulging. It's hard to imagine. Picture me rolling.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is Council Member Ash Kalra. He represents San Jose's 2nd District. You mentioned high-speed rail. Talk about some of the challenges that this not only has your area encountered, but statewide. We've had some major struggle to try to put in high-speed rail that's comparable to the rest of the industrialized world.
Yeah, that's right. We're playing catch-up when it comes to high-speed rail, and part of the reason is that people don't want to put up with having a high-speed rail system go through their city or change the quality of their life. The reality is that in California, we've had a rail system for many, many years. The train tracks go right through the middle of the district I represent, so I know exactly what impacts high-speed rail will have on my community. And anyone that thinks that the railroad tracks that high-speed rail will divide their community, those tracks have been there since the 19th century. So they've been dividing the community. We have an opportunity to bring the community together through high-speed rail. It gets rid of all the grade separation. And the communities that are complaining about it.
What's grade separation?
Grade separation is essentially where you have the tracks crossing the road, where you have to have the traffic stop. Well, grade separations causes either the road or the railroad tracks to go above or below each other. And so now you don't have to have traffic stop, which incidentally creates a lot of pollution when you have cars sitting there idling for a few minutes. Now we won't have that anymore. We won't have noise pollution, so to speak, because you won't have to hear the horn and the whistle from the train anymore. There'll be less fatalities on the tracks. Because of that grade separation, you can now fence off the tracks altogether. So there are many benefits, including the trains being much more quiet because you electrify the trains and you put sound walls on each side of the train. So there are an enormous amount of benefits to neighborhoods that aren't being discussed. And my frustration is it's going through my working class neighborhood and we're dealing with it. We're getting committees of neighbors to try to beautify the way the tracks are going to look like and the sound walls are going to look like, while you have these wealthy millionaires that are standing up opposing it, even though it's for the better good of our state and it's for the better good of future generations, because it's not like if you don't build high-speed rail, you do nothing. If you don't build high-speed rail, that means hundreds of more miles of freeway lanes, more runway miles in our airplanes, and we can get rid of some of these short airplane routes, which are really bad for the environment. San Jose to LA, San Francisco to Orange County. Those are terrible, terrible routes for our environment for airplanes to travel. Instead, we can get on high speed rail and I can get from San Jose to LA in 2 hours. And it's better for our economy. It's better for our environment. And, you know, it's really frustrating when wealthy people stand up and try to oppose something that's for the greater good of the community.
Have you engaged with any of these wealthier citizens? I'm curious to see what their protests are and how you would face them.
I've engaged more with the elected officials that represent them that, in my opinion, are doing a disservice to their community by not taking the leadership role of standing up and trying to educate the greater community as to why a project like high-speed rail is good for all of us as a state, as a nation, frankly. And I think the frustrating part is that people...
They also want to have their roads fixed in the same breath, right? And they don't see that there's a connection.
Of course. And they think the roads are free. And they think the roads aren't subsidized. We subsidize the roads so much in this country. The freeways are enormously subsidized. And, you know, they don't see the connection. And the fact that, that we are causing people to have a much reduced quality of life. If someone, right now we have, you know, literally thousands and thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of working class people that come into the Bay Area that live out in the valleys, in central California, maybe heading towards Sacramento. What about their quality of life? What about the pollution they're putting in the air when they have to commute 1 or 2 hours each way away from their families? While instead, I can have someone live in the Central Valley in Fresno, and you can have a couple, the husband works in San Jose, the wife works in LA, a 1 hour commute each way on a train where they can read, they can do work, they can relax, and they can meet each other for dinner every night without polluting the air and without staying away, but without taking the time away from their families. You know, that's the kind of monumental change high-speed rail can have on the quality of life for residents while improving the environment.
Tell us some of the innovations that the San Jose metropolitan area is taking in terms of upgrading your electric grid, your power.
As many people that are from the Bay Area know, it can be challenging sometimes to do energy initiatives because of PG&E. They make it challenging sometimes for us to do innovative initiatives such as getting solar into some of our facilities or trying to do some more localized municipal utility style movements. But we've been very aggressive in terms of getting solar into our neighborhoods. We've worked with a local company, SunPower, which is a global leader, but they are from San Jose and they've worked with us in trying to get solar into our communities, into our neighborhoods. And San Jose, you know, it's over 300 days of sunlight a year, of sunshine a year. And it's an ideal location for solar. So we're really moving aggressively to try to get solar, not just into the residents, but into the commercial properties. We're trying to get it up on every city facility before the end of this decade to try to, you know, really combat the energy costs. I mean, the flip side of energy as well has to do with the usage side, not necessarily the supply side. And so we're trying to reduce the amount that we use by becoming more efficient. For those that don't know, San Jose City Hall is the only LEED Platinum City Hall in the nation. And so it's not just based upon the way the City Hall is built, but also in how we minimize our energy usage and make it a priority in our city. And so there are a lot of things we can do. I think a lot of it has to do with educating our community and bringing solar down to earth in terms of pricing, which is something that I think we're getting there, especially with some of the federal and certainly state subsidies that are allowed at this time. But going forward, there are other things besides just solar that we have to do. And part of that has to do with just being more efficient with how we use our energy and how effective we are with our energy usage.
Ash Kalra, council member from San Jose's 2nd District, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by the Baja Marimba Band, Little Feet, and Tupac Shakur. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.